And hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's weekly Yap podcast, the Yes And podcast. I'm your host, Travis Thomas, and this is episode 26 with John O'Leary. And I am so excited to talk to John, super gracious for taking his time. And so we're going to get into that really shortly. And I say really shortly because I got some great feedback this week from a good friend of mine. We all need to have friends who will give you constructive feedback that you know is actually coming from a good place. And I absolutely listened to Evan, and he said, I love the interviews. I think you need to get to them a little bit quicker at the beginning and save your updates, your yes and updates for the end of the podcast. And I can't agree with him more. It's been something that I've been like, you know what, maybe I need to save these for the end. So he gave me that feedback and I took it, and you are noticing it today. So we're getting right to our interview with John O'Leary. Now, John has become a friend of mine. I am honored to call John a friend. And he has a book that is out as of right now. It's called On Fire by John O'Leary. You can buy the book anywhere and everywhere. It's going to be a huge success. And I think how I met John is actually a testament to sort of living yes and. And so a few years ago, we're going back about 2.5 years ago, I had just been working at IMG Academy for a few years, I got a call from a woman, she had been recommended to me from a good friend of mine, and here is how living yes and works. And so let's go back about 7 years ago. I'm living in St. Louis. My wife and I were living in St. Louis with the kids. I have no job. The only job I have is I'm the assistant coach to a JV high school basketball team. An assistant coach to a JV high school basketball team. We're living in St. Louis. We don't have enough money to pay our bills. But I'm just kind of like, this is where we are. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. All right, help me out, Father. And struggling, financially struggling. And a friend who was living in St. Louis, an old college friend of mine, he was the creative director at an advertising agency in St. Louis. And he said, hey, listen, Travis, would you come in and do an improv workshop with my staff, my creative staff? I think they would really get a lot out of it. So I said, absolutely. I went in, I did it for free. It was about 15 people. I had a great time. I did about 2.5 hours and just had a wonderful time, did it for a friend. And so I had a great time doing it. Now, fast forward to 5 years later, this woman reaches out to me. I'm living back in Florida now. She's in St. Louis. And she says, Travis, I don't know if you remember me, but about 5 years ago, you did that improv workshop for your buddy. I was at that, and it really, really had a big impact on me. And I remember a lot of your ideas. She says, I now work for this inspirational speaker in St. Louis. His name's John O'Leary. He's having a conference, and I think you would be perfect as a post-lunch speaker. So of course I said yes, absolutely I said yes. So I didn't know much about John at the time. I went up to the event, I did my presentation, but I got to spend the entire day there meeting with John, seeing John speak, and I was in tears most of the day because John's message and his story is so powerful, it's so impactful. And John and I really connected, and then John brought me back a year later to do it again. And because he really believed in what Live Yes And is all about. And now fast forward to, that was just actually last year as far as the second event. And now John is on the cusp of just being a household name, as he should be, because his story is so inspiring. John was burned, 30-degree burns over, I think, 90% of his body when he was a 9-year-old child, and was not supposed to live through the night, let alone live a productive and vibrant and the big life that he is living now. And so he has been a public speaker all over the world for the last few years. He's done over 1,000 events. And now this is his book telling his story, and it will move you. I've read the book. I get choked up reading the book. And like John says, the book is for you. It's not about him. It is for you. And so John, with his massive schedule of doing press, of doing media, took the time for little old me to do this podcast. And so I'm so excited. The book is out. Buy the book. But without further ado, let's jump into the podcast with the one and only John O'Leary. And welcome everyone to this week's weekly Yap podcast, the SAM podcast. And I am so excited to have John O'Leary on the phone with me right now. John is taking this is a gift for from John to me, because he is taking what very little time he has right now to talk to someone who probably doesn't deserve his attention with all the media outlets that want to talk to him. So it's just a testament to how much pity John has on me in allowing me to interview him. John, was that a pathetic enough introduction to the podcast?
You read it just like I wrote it. So I think there's three more paragraphs to go, but that's a great start, Travis. And the truth is this, I'm delighted to be on your show and would rather be nowhere else.
Well, I appreciate that, John, and thanks so much. Well, here we are. Let's get right into it, John. The book is now out, and I know you've been on the road. You've been a crazy man. You've been a road warrior, waking up in a new city, probably not knowing what city you're in for the last couple weeks, if not last couple months. What has this experience been like you for the lead up to the book?
Yeah, so Travis, I wrote a book called On Fire, and it's about when I was burned as a child, the lessons I learned and the people that showed me them and how we can all apply them in our own lives. So it's a book that I love. It's a book that I believe in. It's a message that I think is important. And the last couple of months have been the buildup to releasing it. To get the message out, it means you got to be in different cities in front of different people sharing the good news. And for me, it's been surreal, I think primarily because I never even really knew that I had a story to tell. And I never really knew that I had a microphone to speak into. And then all of a sudden, we have a story, we have a message, we have a platform, we have the ability to convey it. And now we got some people that are willing to listen and to share. And for me, it's just been surreal. It has been absolutely surreal and humbling and a great honor.
Well, John, it amazes me, and I know, you know, you've said this before, and, you know, I've had the honor to know you now for a couple of years and speaking at two of your events, and, you know, not knowing much about you before your events and then being at your events, I mean, I was absolutely blown away by your story, by your message, and then just how genuine and authentic you really are with your message and everything that you do. And it blows me away for you to think about and that it really didn't hit you until your parents wrote the story, that you had a story to tell. So tell us about that. How could you go through what you went through without really feeling like, you know, this was a powerful or relevant story?
Yeah. So, and Travis, we can come back to the burn story if you'd like right now, but just so your listeners get a sense for it, when I was 9 years old, I was in a house fire, burned on 100% of my body. 87% was third degree. It is a death sentence. And yet somehow, through God's grace and through a whole lot of other people showing up right on time, I survived, spent 5 months in hospital, dozens of surgeries, years of surgery and therapy, lost all my fingers to amputation. And for me, back then as a child, the great goal was just to go back home. It was just to be ordinary and just to go back to who I was before being burned. And so when that becomes a reality, when I'm actually back at home and sitting around the dinner table, even though I'm in a wheelchair, even though everything physically is completely different, my goal as a child was to be normal, which I realize is not an extravagant goal. It's not thinking overly huge right then, but that was my goal. And it remained my goal a year later when I went back to grade school. And it remained my goal a couple years later into middle school and on to high school. The whole big goal of life was to fit in, which means you cover up the scars and you act like everything's ordinary. You do everything that everybody else is doing. You try to fit in. You wear gray. You disappear. And so that's what I did for years, and graduated college, started my own business. Looking back on it, even the business that I chose, I think, was chosen as a cry to the world of how ordinary I was. I mean, if you can think of the hardest business in the world for a guy that does not have fingers to take on, becoming a carpenter and a general contractor would be at the near height of that list, and that's what I chose. And I wasn't doing it to be funny or trite. I think so subconsciously, and that's a big play here. I mean, what's going on within our ears is a big part of who we are and how we show up. I chose carpentry, and I did that for about 9 years, and then my mom and dad wrote their book, and that's what got me off the ladder and let me set down the hammer and allowed me to really look in the mirror and embrace the gift of my story and realize that it was not a tragedy, that the scars aren't ugly. It's actually a blessing, and it's worth embracing first with the guy in the mirror, then with my spouse, but now with my children, and then with an audience around me.
And John, in the book, which is fantastic, and I'm not just saying that because you are a friend, but because every time, you know, I remember, you know, again, meeting you for the first time and seeing you speak all day at the conference, and I'm just listening to you and I'm captivated. I'm sitting there going, holy cow, why doesn't everybody know about this guy? And little did I know that you were working on the book that everyone is going to know about you, and rightfully so. But in the book, you share the story about your first speaking gig was for four Girl Scouts. and you dreaded it, and you threw up in the parking lot before going in. And I'm laughing as I read the book, because anyone who has seen you speak, trust me, John, they look at you and go, wow, this guy was born to speak and born to be on stage. So tell us a little bit about just what that transformation was like for you as you realized you did have a story to share, to go from being terrified in the parking lot to being this national global speaker.
Well, even hearing that, I mean, I'm a really ordinary guy. I feel blessed. I got a beautiful bride and four children, and I'm a whole lot of job titles before speaker and writer. So I'm grateful for that, but how I really identify myself, and I think that's part, candidly, my success, is there's not a whole lot of ego at stake. It's a humble message, and it is extraordinarily authentic. So I think audiences aren't very used to hearing that kind of delivery. There's a quote that shows up a couple times in the book, and I know you know it from the book, but I also know, Travis, you knew it before the book, from Viktor Frankl. And Frankl says, when you know your why, you can endure anyhow. For me, that's a really compelling statement. When you know your purpose or your calling or the challenge that God gave you, you can endure all the stairs, all the challenges, all the road bumps on your journey toward ultimate success. And so as a child, you know, I was trying to be ordinary. Now as a man, I'm trying to remind others to wake up to the gift of their story, that the world needs us to show up again, and that we need to embrace our stories and share them with others. And so that I feel called to this, which allows me to get sick in the parking lot and to share it before Girl Scouts, and then to do a little bit better the next time, and then to do a little bit better the next time. And it has been a process. It has been a journey. It's been wild. I'm still on it. I have not arrived. But I'm trying to do a little bit better today than I did yesterday, and I hope tomorrow I'll be even a tiny bit better than today.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit, John, because for the last, you know, half dozen, you know, close to 10 years, you have really been, you've been on the road, you've been sharing your message, you know, a couple of hundred times, you know, each year, which has taken you away from the family. It's taken you all over the place, and you're going into some very corporate environments, you're going into some very business environments, and yet you have such a message of heart and inspiration. What is it about you going out and speaking that is so important for you?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, regardless of the job title or income level or success, whatever that word means, or culture organizationally, the individuals that make up the business return to their wives. At some point, you punch out, you get in your car, you get in a taxi, you get in an Uber, you hop on a train, and you go home. And you make a home to children, you make a home to a lonely apartment, but you go home. And you're stuck there looking in the mirror, wondering what your life is really all about, what really matters, what are we doing here, what happens when we die, how do you come fully alive? These are the questions at the end of the day that matter most to all the individuals that make up an organization. And so then they bring in a guy like John O'Leary, and between the accountant speaking over there and the cash flow experts over there and guys teaching us how to sell more over here, comes a guy who doesn't have any really anything to sell other than the encouragement that there's more out there for us to do and we can do it better. And earlier in the message, the interview, Travis, you said, John, it's a story about you, and I'm grateful for that, but I would suggest it's actually not about me. It really is about the individuals in my life who showed up, what they did, how they did it, and how we readers and listeners can do our life and our work even better. And that, for me, it's a cool message to remind the accountant and the nurse and the parent and the school teacher how they got to where they are today professionally, and how we can do this job and then return to our real life and do it all even better going forward.
And while you've been out there speaking at these different places, John, and what is it, what would you say has surprised you most when you work at especially some of these corporate events where, you know, people are a little bit more buttoned up, or at least at first they're a little bit more buttoned up. But then you come out and you share your message, and sometimes you probably feel that you've got, you know, one foot in the grave trying to change the energy of a room. But what is it for you that you know that the room is going to be able to shift, or the room is going to be able to connect to what you're talking about?
In the journey, and this 1,500 conversations and like minimum. That's an awful lot of flights and a lot of microphones and failures of PowerPoint and everything else that we deal with when we're on the road. But by this point, I don't have any anxiety at all whether or not it's going to work and whether the room will shift. I know it will, and that's not ego speaking. It's just experience. And why does it shift might be the question. Why does it shift?
Yeah,
I think it's because people are longing for more in their lives, and they're done acting like, you know, Travis, how you doing today? And the typical answer is fine. Well, fine, but how are you really doing, man? And we're not always doing fine in every area of life. And in some areas, we're doing lousy, and in others, we are freaking on fire. And I give people the permission to be honest. I read an author years ago named Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen kind of writes and speaks in the Christian space, and he writes so vulnerably about himself that you feel bad about the poor guy. I mean, he is such a loser. But as you're reading about this poor loser, you're flipping the pages saying, my God, what is he going to do next? How far is he going to go down, this poor fool? And I've found as a writer now and as a speaker, the more vulnerably I can share how broken I am, how miserable sometimes I am, how blessed I am in other areas, the more the audience will turn pages with me and uncross their arms and open up their hearts to their story. Because that's why you and I, Travis, do what we do. It's not to gain listeners. It's not to sell more books. It's to gain lives. It's to touch the world. It's to turn the light on even brighter and to push back negativity and fear. And we think, one by one, we can do this effectively, and I know we do this. And so when I go out there and speak into a marketplace of arms crossed and hearts cold, I know slowly lights will go on in the room, and it's a worthwhile trip, and it's going to allow these men and women to do life even better that day and beyond.
And I love that message of vulnerability, John. And you know, it's interesting. You've got Brené Brown out there with which has really helped sort of bring that message of vulnerability to the forefront, and who also shows up on the cover of your book, by the way. But that power of vulnerability and leadership. Can you talk a little bit more about that, John? Because I feel like it's a quality that we're starting to talk about, but it is a quality that whether it's cultural or whether it's our society. This idea of leaders being vulnerable is not really embraced. And so from your experience with all the audiences you've spoken to, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, perfect. So how about we begin by answering, how did you get freaking Brené Brown to write the cover quote for your book?
I would love to know that.
I mean, really, because she doesn't do it. I mean, she's so well-regarded these days that that's a dangerous position for her to put herself in. And also it's awkward because everybody, I think, wants a name like Brené on the front of their book. So that happened because I spoke at a Southwest Airlines event. I happened to sit at a table next to a gal who was speaking directly before me, a woman named Brené Brown. I talked nothing at all about my business, nothing at all about my message, really nothing at all about me. I was just talking about her books, the way her books have affected me positively. We became friends. We exchanged cell phone numbers. We stayed in touch. Probably the second or third call, she learned that I'm a presenter and I'm a writer. On the fourth call, she had read my book by then, and she said, gosh, I want to do more for you. Without me asking, she said, can I write the cover quote, the testimonial for your book? And I think the more we can make our lives honestly about those around us, the more it attracts them to us and them also to themselves. And both of us will be elevated through that process. So that is a living example of the message we try to breathe out through our book and through my speeches. I think that that's pretty cool right there. Now, you said, well, how does it show politically and how does it show up with leadership today? And I would suggest to you, vulnerability does not show up politically. Watch the debates. It is the most miserable set of people who know the answers to everything, who have not made mistakes, who have never uttered the words, I don't know, or I need help, or can I get back to you on that, which are comments that a real leader will make all the time, because a true leader, a real man, a real woman, does not have all the answers, and they're smart enough to know it. And our politicians aren't smart enough to know they don't know. And there's so much ego and so much fear and so much dread being shared on both sides of the aisle right now that I think we need a real politician to come out and a real leader to come out and vulnerably say, gosh, we don't know all the answers, but we have enough issues to know that we got to figure it out together. And we got enough bright, smart, driven people in the room to get there. I think organizationally, then, if you bring it back to businesses, the most cold-hearted businesses are the ones led by individuals that think they know it all. And yet the most successful, vibrant businesses like Southwest Airlines are the ones made up of leaders that don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
But collectively, you put them in a room, man, and you drive them forward with mission, and we're going to get there. And I just get turned on by those types of businesses. Sometimes, like Southwest, we have 48,000 employees. But other times, you know, you spoke recently at a conference for YPO with a bunch of smaller family businesses. Those are some of the best businesses in the world that are driven by mission, they're fueled by love, and they care deeply about one another in the room. So we see it alive and well in these events, in these conferences, in these businesses that understand that it's not ego-driven. It's love-driven, and it matters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we need as much of that as we can get. All right, John, let's go back into the book a little bit, because I'm really curious. So I know this has been a 3-year labor of love for you putting this book together. And as I read it, I just love the detail that you're able to bring the reader back into the actual experience, the experience of the fire, but then the experience of all of the lessons learned along the way. And so what was that like for you having to really kind of recall all of those experiences, recall all of those events and being able to put them together and being able to find really the treasure in all of it? What was that like for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm therapeutic, certainly, and very healing. I started writing this book, you know, I know I kind of put out there in the marketplace 3 years. The reality is I've been writing for probably 9 years, gradually, just slowly piecing this thing together piece by piece. It's like a big mosaic. And how do you write a book about you being burned as a kid, but write it in such a way where it actually has nothing to do with you being burned as a kid? I mean, I think one of the amazing things about the book is it's really not about John O'Leary, really. Simon & Schuster, who published it, wanted to put a picture of me on the front of it, and I just refused because it's not about the author. It's about the reader. And so even understanding how do you glue this thing together and make it fit just right, that took a long time. But for me, 9 years ago when the process began, my wife traveled when the weekend I began writing. So I'm at home. I have one child with me. He's sleeping in his crib. And I started writing about the day I was burned. And I remember just having to step away from the computer because it got so real and so raw. And the deeper I went into it, the more that I remembered from it. So it just brought back a flood of memories that were at first extraordinarily painful. But then if you sit with them for a little while, you realize that they're not. I mean, yeah, it's a tragic experience, but it was a blessing. The people who showed up, my brothers and my sisters and my mom and dad later on that morning, did exactly the right thing at exactly the right time to give this little boy a chance to survive. And what they were modeling that day is what you can model as a man, what we can model as in the community, how we can change lives beyond our own. And so it was therapeutic. It was fun, it was inspirational, but ultimately, as always, it was not about me, it was about the reader and the audience that will check it out later on.
Yeah, it's amazing, John. It's funny. As I read the book, and obviously as I've known you, you, your story, your life, your message, everything about you, you exemplify sort of what I believe kind of, you know, living that yes and is all about. Like everything about you is, and how you and everyone responded to the situation was all about, you know, yes and it's, when you think about anyone out there, and obviously your book is going to be the perfect sort of remedy for that, but anyone out there who feels stuck, who feels like they're in a situation that seems impossible or undoable, for you, what is the one idea you go back to as far as that just gives you hope?
So, I come from a place of faith, and I don't wear it on my sleeve. Instead, I hope it's rooted from my heart. So, like when I speak, and even in the book, I don't talk a whole lot about my faith. I wanted to make sure that my story would be able to be viewed and read and light up a very secular world. I'm aware of the marketplace that we live and speak and write into these days, but it informs me in what I say and what I do and how I show up. And for me, I mean, at the end of the day, Travis, I know that God works through all things, fires, divorce, tragedy, death, life, everything. If I know that, and I think if your audience, if they can really just surrender to that, it means you can never fall that far down. I mean, the bankruptcy is not the end of it. The divorce, it's not the end of it. The loss of a dear friend, even a family member, it's not the end of it. It's not the end of it. So for me, that's inspiring. It's empowering. If you go back to like a hero's tale, very seldom does the hero, whoever he or she is, get to the top without an awful lot of falls. I mean, that would be the lamest, most horrible story to ever bump into. Say, you know, a guy's going to climb a mountain. He gets the material. He gets the rope. He gets the tools. He starts his way up. He gets to the top. He puts his hand up and he high-fives himself. That sucks. I mean, typically we fall into crevasses. We break our legs. We didn't realize we needed oxygen about 26,000 feet. Now we're gasping and you keep climbing anyway. So my encouragement to your listeners is to keep climbing. No matter how many times they fall, to realize, man, we're going to get to the top. We're going to get there together. And when we do, then we can look back and we can realize those falls were probably the best part of our story.
Yeah. Yeah. And John, I'm looking at the clock and I'm being super sensitive to your time. At this point, you've probably got Good Morning America on line one, Oprah on line two.
I got Travis on line one. The others can hold.
So, John, this is, I'm sure there's a little bit of a, obviously this is not the finish line, but as far as getting the book out to the world, there's a little bit of a finish line now as far as, okay, it's out there. Now it's going to do what it's going to do. And just so you know, I will have a link to this podcast for all of you out there to click on the link and buy it. And obviously it's sold where all good books are sold. But looking back on the process, John, for the 3 years or 9 years, what has surprised you most about taking this journey on and putting this book together?
Yeah. I mean, maybe this sounds strange, but maybe the answer is I think that it worked. You know, when I started writing it, the 3 years is what I've been spending time specifically on the book On Fire. But I've been writing about the journey for 8 or 9. I sent out many, 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 many dozens of proposals 6 years ago. I heard back from exactly zero publishing houses. No one even said, "This sucks, get out of my face." No one wrote back to me. And so to keep plugging forward and to continue having faith and to believe that, you know what, this is a message the world needs. The fact that eventually we got the opportunity to sit down with 4 publishing houses in New York, that all 4 wrote proposals to us, that we were able to say, gosh, which one do we want to work with and why? That we got to partner with Simon & Schuster, that we printed an awful lot of books, that we pre-sold many, 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 many thousands of books, that the media is starting to catch wind of this and smell it and say, gosh, this might be a story we want to share, that the book actually is powerful, that people who read it who don't know me love it. You know, the first one who read it was my mom. I expected her to like it. So when she said, "I love it," that's good. But when we share it with a stranger who says, "I love it too," it worked. It worked. And to look back on my life and to have a bride and to have 4 healthy kids and to have a home and to have my health and to have my faith, and to now have this book saying, gosh, it worked and it's going to work for you too. That has just, it has blown me away, and it keeps me totally humble and very hungry.
And so moving forward, John, and you've been a man that's been living on the road nonstop for a number of years now. what's your goal? What's your vision that you would like to see move forward from here? As far as, I don't know if you want to be on the road speaking so much, but what would you like to see kind of happen as a result of now?
Yeah, so I'm going to answer that in two parts. The first is for your listeners who might find themselves on the road or find themselves with a job that creates a lot of stress. And they may be asking themselves, how does this guy who keeps bragging about his family reconcile being on the road? Because to me, if I just heard that, I would say, gosh, something doesn't smell quite right here. Here's how we do it. When I'm on the road, I am on the road. You know, I'm fully engaged in West Palm Beach, if that's where I am, or New York City, or wherever, some small town in Nebraska, I am right there. But when I'm home, and I'm home 200 days or more a year, you can't find me, man. My phone is off, the laptop's shut. I am fully alive and awake and intentional, saying yes only to my kids and only to my wife. So I would encourage your listeners not to strive for balance, because they'll always be disappointed, but strive instead for being in the moment and being alive and engaged and grateful for the gift of right now. I think it will allow them to do work and do life even better. So right now I'm at home. I'm taking this call from my office. When you and I get off, I'm actually going to finish making pancakes for my little ones. So I'm alive right now at home, and I took this call because I love Travis. I love Yes and I think you have a message that can change a lot of lives, including mine. So that's the first part. The second part is, what do I want to do next? Man, I want to travel less. I want to use this as a magnaphone to broadcast this message out. I want to become a little bit more, in a sense, like Oprah, as goofy as that may sound. She's now kind of in retirement. But if Oprah's got a phenomenal personal story, but if she was on the road sharing the story of her youth and the racism she dealt with and the sexism she dealt with and how she rose above, she could give 3 or 4 killer speeches, and then that's about it. I think that when you can use your story vulnerably to unpack the stories of those around you, broadcast them, and multiply them out into a community looking for hope and perspective and a clear next step, man, now you can do something cool. So although I don't have the business case for it yet, I think there's a way to turn this into a multiplier of taking other people's stories, of teaching them how to do their story even better, and of walking with them forward toward their finish line, whatever finish line that may look like for them. So I'm excited to discern that, to come home a lot more, and to elevate the lives of those of the individuals we serve.
Fantastic, John. And I'm so excited. I'm so giddy as the book is finally making its way out to the world. I'm so excited for you and the family and all the success that's going to come as a result. But more than anything, I'm excited about just how this is only going to increase your opportunity with that platform and to be able to do all the things that that you just described, because I think you are definitely the right guy for the job. So thanks so much, brother. Thanks so much for this time. This is a gift to me, and I truly appreciate it.
Travis, this is canned. I love your work. Your listeners, I hope you heard earlier, Travis mentioned that he's spoken twice for John O'Leary. We've had 2 big leadership conferences. I've been able to bring in my favorite presenters from the entire world. So guys and gals that I look up to, guys that if I had to sit in that audience, I would want to hear from. And both times I invited my main man, Travis, to speak, because that's how I feel about him as a man and this message that he shares. And I'm delighted to be on your show. And you used the word a moment ago, increase. Man, that is a cool word. So I hope that you are able to increase your ability to influence others, and I hope your listeners, they are able to increase their influence and how they wake up from accidental living and really step into the great gift of their lives today.
Oh, absolutely, John. Thanks so much. Well, hey, listen, you've got, I'm sure you got a house of little feet there that would love some of your attention. And so I'm going to let
you. They need pancakes, man. They need pancakes.
I tell you, that is priority one. So buy the book, people. The book is on fire. Author John O'Leary. If you don't buy it, you're going to hear everyone else talking about it. So you might as well be an early adapter. Go buy the book and then tell all your friends about it. And you'll be the one that said, hey, man, I'm so glad you told me about that book. It's going to be a huge hit. John, thanks so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and I can't wait to connect with you again soon.
Brother, keep living, yes, and thanks for allowing me to share my story.
There you have it, the one and only John O'Leary. Please go out and buy the book. It is it's a book that you will enjoy and be moved by on so many different levels. It's just one of those books, and go out and get it. Buy it for a friend. Buy it for a family member who is going through a tough time, or anyone who just needs a little bit of inspiration. Go out and buy the book. And just what I love about me actually even getting to meet John. It was just a huge live yes and for me because, again, it was at a time where I had nothing going on, and I said yes and to a friend who wanted to bring me in, and it was just about saying yes to the opportunity and not knowing that 5 years later it would turn into really probably the biggest opportunity I've had come along that really has helped sort of launch my speaking career and doing the thing that I love. And I have John to thank for that. I have so many friends to thank for that. But for me, I remind myself of that all the time, of how you just never know how showing up on purpose today is going to open up an opportunity down the road. And we all know that showing up on purpose today is going to help us today, but it also helps us further down the road. So just wanted to share that. And so, well, there you have it, everyone. As far as personal updates, make sure you check me out every day on Periscope. Social media, I'm at LiveYesAnd. My website is liveyesand.com. And we've got a Jove improv show coming up this Friday in North Palm Beach, those of you who are in Florida. And I am working on the finishing touches to my book as well. And so we'll have plenty of updates on that. But the book to talk about right now is On Fire by John O'Leary. Go out and get it, everybody, and have a wonderful, wonderful Yes and Day.